Welcome back to another episode of the Hawk Off the Press podcast. My name is Madison Hertzik. I am the Iowa football beat reporter, and we have all of the University Iowa beat writers here today. We've got Rob Gray, who covers Iowa State, and Mike Halas, our columnist, who does a little bit of everything. And I feel like we had to bring out everybody for this week because it is the biggest game in the country, in my opinion. This is the biggest one. But it is Cy-Hawk week, and it is time to talk about an in-state rivalry that I, for one, am very excited to get to witness for the first time. So, Rob and Mike, thank you so much for chatting with me this week.
Absolutely. It's going to be quite a baptism into quote-unquote hate for you. It's probably already started.
Honestly, I have been very surprised by the amount of social media posts I've seen on this rivalry, just like getting me getting me acclimated is the best way of saying it. But it's like, I've definitely gotten a taste of it. So it's fun to scroll on TikTok and see people talking about their rivalry, or on Twitter, someone's mentioning this new thing and there's banter going on. It's fun to get the social media side of it, but I am very interested to see what it's going to look like in person on Saturday.
For sure.
It'll look like a mess.
I'm not talking just going about straight into it.
I'm not talking about the game, although that's always a possibility.
It often is.
But Rob, I estimate 150,000 people there who have no business being there because they don't have game tickets. You've been there. What do you think?
Yeah, there are a lot of people hanging around Jack Trice Stadium and its environs who have no intention of going to the game, but have intention to bad intentions, perhaps. But not in a malicious way, just bad intentions in terms of how their head might feel the next morning.
I have a sister and she and her significant other are leaving the Quad Cities at 5 a.m. to go there and do nothing but tailgate. And I told them how little I regard them for making that decision and getting in my way.
That is funny. No,
obviously I share that sentiment, Mike.
I was looking on Iowa State's ticket website earlier this week. There's some tailgating spots that were over $1,000. Like, the closer you got to the stadium, I think the cheapest one that I saw was like $400. And I wish that was like an over exaggeration, but it really wasn't. So I think that was the first moment where I noticed. I was like, okay, this is bigger than any other rivalry I've covered. And like,
well, I've got a parking spot for that game. And I'll sell mine for $700.
Just cover it.
I'll sell mine too. How about that?
I'll walk from Nevada for $700.
I'll come from Boone. I'll come from the other direction, and we'll meet on University Boulevard.
I'll take the low road.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, this is obviously outside of just the tailgating and fan experience. This is a big game for both of these teams. Rob, I wanted to ask you, what has been your initial impression of this Iowa State team through two games? They've played one ranked game and one almost a tune-up in sense. What have you made of this team so far?
Yeah, I think what this team has is early on is a lot of what last year's team had, you know, that set a school record with 11 wins. Beat Miami in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. It's hard to talk about the Pop-Tarts Bowl like it's basically the most prestigious non-playoff bowl game, but it kind of is. I don't know what that says about us, society, anything else, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know, and it all starts with Rocco Beck, the quarterback, who a great soundbite. Iowa State offense coordinator, second-year offense coordinator Taylor Mauser is always a great news conference guy, and he called Rocco a psychopath, and you know, that can be good. You know, you aren't necessarily a serial killer if you're a psychopath. A lot of CEOs, people who are in sort of hero occupations, they have some of those traits that they can just be laser focused on the moment. And I think that's what it starts with Rocco. He's an extension of head coach Matt Campbell, who preaches that.
Is that the definition of a psychopath, though?
Yeah, that you can basically emotionless go about your business in a really precise and productive way. I mean, that's certainly one definition. There's a great book about it too that an Oxford professor wrote about what saints, sinners, and spies and serial killers can tell us about whatever. It's about psychopaths and how they can. You can learn from that
Tell us more about your knowledge of serial killers.
Well, it's mostly based on utter fiction, like Criminal Minds. So, you know, it's not.
Hey, don't tell me Criminal Minds.
But I mean, to tie it all back, he is an extension of head coach Matt Campbell, who he gets boring the point of how much he talks about being in the moment and all that, but it's in the process, but it's important to him. And again, we've seen it bear fruit, especially the last season plus. And it feels like Iowa State's in that same headspace coming into this game. Whether that carries over, they haven't won in Ames for 14 years, we'll see. But it's always a weird game. Sometimes, as Mike said, although not necessarily about the game, a messy game. And whoever makes the least mess usually wins.
Yeah, that seems to be the history of all of it. I mean, when you look at the last decade, everything has been a close game coming down to fourth quarter. I think it was 5 of the last 7 games have been a one score game, if not less. Maybe it's even 6 to 7 or more than that. But it seems like every year it always comes down to one or two plays and who does it, and basically who makes a mistake first. So Mike, I'm going to ask you this next question, since you were telling me about some research you were doing on this. But you know, when you look at this rivalry, first off, it's a week 2 game, which to me is very new. That's new territory for me. But when you look at a rivalry that's got this much history behind it and is so close, how do you take all of that information and some of the research you've been doing on some other rivalries around the country and, you know, rank this particular Cy-Hawk game compared to some of these other national rivalries that'll come later this year?
I think this rivalry kind of snuck up on us as a great one. For a long, long time, it's been going for a quarter or a half century now. There was about 40 plus years before that where they didn't play each other. They resumed it in the late 70s. And for a long, long time, it was one-sided. The games weren't any good. And it was an afterthought, really. It was just one of those things that in our business we had to get through. Iowa fans didn't get excited about it. Iowa State fans hated it because they got whooped a lot. But if you take a look at the last 10 or 15 years, you realize that kind of quietly, in my opinion, it's become a great rivalry. That doesn't mean that both teams have had their streaks of 4 or 5 wins in a row in that time, but the games have largely been very close. 9 of the last 13 were settled by one score. Last year's was a field goal with 6 seconds left. The year before, Iowa had a defensive stand in the last minute and a half to hang on. No, there's no in-state rivalry that's got that kind of history in the last 10, 15 years. None. It's not even close. I mean, 4 of the last 5 games, Iowa State, were settled by one score. No in-state rivalry in the country can say that. I mean, last year, Indiana beat Purdue 66-0. Okay?
Yeah.
Michigan State doesn't compare. I can go on down the line. I don't care if it's the Iron Bowl, the Egg Bowl, you know, the Egg Salad Bowl, the Mashed Potatoes Bowl. It doesn't matter. This has been the closest, best rivalry. And I think that maybe we undersell it because we don't see the forest for the trees.
That's an interesting point, too, because it's starting to reach the national level as well. It's always been, these last couple seasons, been a big game. But, I mean, you've got Big Noon Kickoff making an appearance. It's nationally televised. It's a week 2 matchup. So when you look at the grand scheme of the rest of the schedule around the country, there's a couple good games here and there, but nothing's jumping off the paper except this one. But I'm curious for both of your thoughts here. When you look at this rivalry, particularly in those last couple seasons, how much of it being so close has really impacted the national recognition that this rivalry is really getting at this point?
I think it's helped. You know, I grew up in Ames, so I remember, and oddly enough, I grew up an Iowa fan since one of my parents went there. So I'd be gloating around in elementary school and junior high back in the day. And then a little thing called Dan McCartney happened. And you know, Iowa late Hayden Fry era nosedived in terms of talent and early Kirk Ferentz era, and Iowa State got a little winning streak going. And I think, as Mike alluded to, that put some juice into a series that was really just, as he said, an afterthought. So it's you know, two college game days have been there. Now you get the big noon Fox. You got the Barstool stuff. I'm not a fan, but a lot of people are. So it has become a game that people nationally pay attention to. And I think that's as astonishing to me as it is to Mike based on the history of it. But when you look at the trajectory of the programs, Iowa perennially a team that at least gets to a bowl game and a decent bowl game, if not multiple double-digit win seasons. Iowa State, a team that under Campbell has since year one, when they did get thumped by Iowa 42-3, famous not-so-nice halftime or post-game speech to the team by Matt Campbell. They've started to become a ranked team. They had the breakthrough in 2000, with the Fiesta Bowl win with Brock Purdy and company in 2020, and now last year with what they did. So I think all of that, the program's rising in prominence, or Iowa maintaining its prominence, and Iowa State rising in prominence, helps make this a bigger game. And just the amount of good players that come out of these schools now. Mm-hmm. Iowa State for a long time didn't put anybody in the NFL of significance. Now they've got lots of guys, just like Iowa's always had lots of guys. So I think all that ties into it and makes it an attractive game to the national folks.
Well, I'll amplify on what you just said, and you covered it very well. Iowa State won 11 games last year. In two of the previous three seasons, if I have this right, or two of the previous four, Iowa won 10 games. Mm-hmm. They've both been to two conference championship games since 2020.
Yeah.
Now, neither one's been a playoff team. Neither one's finished in the top 10 in that time. I'm talking through my hat now, but
I was saying that it slid in at nine.
Neither one's been a superpower, but they've been very good. And what you mentioned about Iowa State sending players to the pros, Iowa has always done that, but Iowa State has sent skill position players to the pros. Yeah. something that seemed inconceivable a few years ago. Iowa State's had high NFL draft picks. And we're talking about players who not only got drafted, but have performed. Brock Purdy, David Montgomery, Breece Hall. Now there's two wide receivers they've got three wide receivers on the Houston Texans squad. This is where Iowa has not fed the NFL, but Iowa has fed the NFL in just about everything else, offensive linemen, tight ends, and defenders, as well as one of the best punters around. So these are legitimate pedigree programs who are in the top one-fourth of FCS or FBS, I'm sorry. So nobody's got on either side has anything to be ashamed of and quite a bit to be proud of. With a ceiling that says they still can get more and they still want more. And to do that, they kind of need to beat each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a fair point too. And the amount of talent and the immediate success a lot of these players have had from both schools once they've reached the pro level has been, it's been fun to watch. And for me, it's been fun to learn the history of as well, as I've been very quickly trying to catch up and learn as much as I can about both programs. Mike, I'm throwing it right back to you here. We're going to talk a little bit about Mark Gronowski here for a second. You and I talked about this a little bit, both again during the Albany game and then afterwards as well. But he didn't have the best showing in his debut. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts a little bit more on how much improvement do you think we'll see between week one and week two with Gronowski, even though he's going to be playing in enemy territory rather than having the crowd with him like he did in Kinnick?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons, besides home field, which doesn't matter in this series, another reason I think Iowa State's a slight favorite is that because Rocco Becht, as Rob mentioned, has come out of the gates beautifully, continuing where he left off last year. The guy's a winner. Becht is really, really good. And I think the rest of the country is waking up to that. And you can't beat having a good veteran quarterback in college football. It goes without saying. Gronowski is a good veteran quarterback who was not good at all in the passing game in week one against an FBS team that's probably going to go 3-8. So it's got people nervous all of a sudden after several months of hype and optimism. I'm not jumping the gun on it. The guy's won 50 college games as a starter. He's got 2 national championship rings. He knows how to play. He knows how to throw the ball. He knows how to win. I think we're going to see nothing but better from him as the season goes along, and it wouldn't surprise me if he played a very nice game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think with Gronowski that surprised a lot of people was that when the coin toss happened at the beginning of the game and Iowa decided that they were going to receive the ball first, it was kind of like, oh, they're going to put Gronowski out there. That's a good sign. But then you had all of that time throughout the preseason, and even though he didn't play in spring ball, people were talking about him all through spring ball. And I do think there is a sense of, you know, how much hype is too much hype around one particular player. I mean, there was a lot of hype around Gronowski, and there still is. I'm not going to say that there isn't. But you're looking at somebody who's succeeded significantly at the FCS level, winning those 2 national titles and things like that, and all of the accolades that he's earned at that level. And then you turn around and he's a little flat. His footwork wasn't great. He's underthrowing passes that were wide open. He's overthrowing on 3rd and long situations. I mean, you look at it, the passing game wasn't good. But I think what I was really interested in, and I talked to Gronowski about this on Tuesday, was just getting a chance to look into his, taking that moment to step into his mindset and everything. And I think the biggest thing that he said was that he got in his head a little bit. You know, he was really tensed up. He was amping it up. He said he probably visualized the game maybe 5 or 6 times before he even got to Kinnick to go do warmups. That's before he even goes through anything with pads on, before he puts his beats on, listens to his classical music playlist, which I still think is amazing, by the way. And so I do think there is a sense of he almost amped himself up too much. And I think that's even where the leg cramping in that second half came in as well. And so he sounds confident. Ference has not wavered in his opinion at all. I mean, he said it immediately after the game against Albany. He's still a good quarterback. He just had a rough first game. He said it on Tuesday. He's a good quarterback. He had a rough game. He's going to be fine. And then he said it during the radio show with Gary Dolphin last night. Yeah, he's a good quarterback. He just had a rough game. The confidence hasn't changed. I feel like if the confidence was different with Ference, this would be a different conversation. But I would be shocked if he had a similar game against Iowa State that he did against Albany, truly.
Yeah, I agree.
From afar, I would say the nerves thing has to be real, in part because there's so much pressure on an Iowa starting quarterback. You have to go back to Nate Stanley, where that position wasn't an utter disaster. I suppose Petrus, you know, in retrospect, nobody thought a whole lot, but boy, you consider what came after.
And also Petrus didn't have an offensive line.
That's which obviously Iowa has again this season. You know, running for over 300 yards against anybody is something when you don't have a passing game going, even against a also ran FCS team like the Great Danes. That's going to be a problem, I think, for Iowa State's D-line. I think that's the big thing for me. The D-line has not produced any pressure on the quarterback for the last 2 seasons, 1-plus season, which is all the more remarkable for a number of reasons why they won 11 games, all the injuries at linebacker, it all ties in. And I think Iowa's probably going to do what they usually do. The way they've beaten Iowa State is not because of stellar quarterback play or not because of stellar offensive play. It's the way Iowa has won at a high level, even with Deacon Hill getting double-digit wins, but that guy is your quarterback. Defense, special teams, and just making fewer mistakes. That's how they've won this series in their most recent victories. And I think that's what they'll lean on Saturday. I think Iowa State's back 7 are really good. The linebackers are really deep. Caleb Bacon is a star in that group. Jontez Williams is one of the best cornerbacks in the country. They're so confident in young safeties. That they move longtime safety and 2-time All Big 12 guy Jeremiah Cooper to the other corner. So I think it's going to be hard to you know, really try to hit Iowa State with big plays unless it's in the run game. And I think Iowa showed, and Iowa State's been a little bit wobbly in the run game at times. Kansas State got over 100 yards in the first half in Dublin, not much in the second, in part because Iowa State was putting more pressure on the scoreboard. And Avery Johnson had success in the pass game. So I think Gronowski can relax a lot more in this game. I think he's probably the type of guy that, given his experience and pedigree, relishes the hostile environment, even though there will be lots of Iowa fans, just as there are always lots of Iowa State fans who snatch up tickets in Kinnick. So the long roundabout way of saying, from my perspective, I expect him to be on his game. But from an Iowa State perspective, I think they're less concerned about him and what that offensive than what that offensive line is going to be able to do with their front.
Yeah, and you mentioned it a little bit, Rob, but I mean, the Iowa State defensive line, they really haven't put a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. And how much of that is a concern from an outside perspective when you're looking at, I think there were three quarterback hurries through these first two games, one sack. And so when you look at that and you kind of know that you're going to be up against a quarterback who's going to be looking to gain a little bit of confidence and got that O-line to give him that extra time, how much of a concern is that for the Cyclones this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a concern, but again, with the caveat that they still won 11 games last season, despite being one of the worst teams in the FBS in terms of sacks, with 16 total. So John Haycock, the veteran defensive coordinator, is very comfortable sticking with that three-man front. Another reason you don't produce pressure a lot. He sometimes brings a couple linebackers or something. He doesn't very rarely all-out blitz comes out of him. He's very confident dropping eight, that they'll be able to take care of that. Now, there have been a couple chinks in their armor in that case. Even South Dakota last week at 3rd and 9 and 3rd and 11, when they drop eight, they convert them easily. So I think part of it also, Haycock doesn't want to show all of his pressures. I think they worked on some things in the offseason, especially bringing guys like Caleb Bacon and a backup linebacker, Zach Lovett, who's been a spy at times off the edge to help. I think Ike Iziagu is a guy to watch. He's had some flashes in there, but I would say needs to be able to get to the quarterback, because Dominic Orange is such a space eater, and it's minimum of two guys on him every single play. And if you can't get pressure, you know, you brought in transfers to help. If you can't get pressure against South Dakota under those circumstances, let alone Kansas State, and their one sack, by the way, trivia item, was because they called grounding on Avery Johnson. So it was a shared sack in which the quarterback wasn't on the ground. So definitely a concern, but Iowa State can win without a whole lot of it as long as it doesn't get gouged in the running game, which I think, again, is their biggest concern, even with Iowa State's lead. Iowa's lead back out again. They've got dudes, and they got an offensive line that can push the Cyclones around. Mm-hmm.
And I think that particularly with the running back room for Iowa, Moulton's going to be out for an unknown period of time. Farron said, you know, he's a couple weeks was what we're looking at, but has been adamant that he will not play on Saturday. But, you know, Rob, Mike, Xavier Williams had that game against Albany where he was 124 rushing yards. He looked like he was extremely comfortable. I know he played pretty well throughout spring ball. He had his first opportunity to really kind of see the field a little bit during the bowl game. But when you've got a running back like that that is able to just go out and make a statement, yes, it's Albany. It's an FCS team that's not really going to produce a whole lot later on this year. But you've got that veteran offensive line that's giving him that kind of opportunity. Mike, I'll start with you. What have you seen out of Xavier Williams in that first game? And, you know, a little bit of this past offseason that makes you think, you know, they'll be okay without Moulton because they'll have TJ and they'll have Xavier to kind of fill that hole for now.
Sure. I mean, when you watched Williams Saturday, I don't think they're going to miss Caleb as much as they thought they would. He runs. I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, he's big, he's thick. He seems to enjoy contact and on delivering punishment before punishment gets delivered to him. And I know we've been using the qualifier. Yes, it was Albany, but those were still some fairly big guys. And he averaged, 11 yards a carry?
Yeah, right around 10, 11 yards per carry.
Yeah, and he's got the high school pedigree. This was no diamond in the rough. They knew they were getting a pretty good one. So this is to me, it's another in the long list of Iowa running backs who, when they have any sort of blocking, ought to be pretty good. And I think that TJ Washington's a very good number two guy. And I'm sure they've got a good number three guy in the wings with Moulton out. I liked Moulton. So for his sake, I hate to see him out. But you only need really two healthy, good running backs. And I think that they've got those. What I want to see from their offense is, do you have any wide receivers who can do anything? And I'm not so sure those wide receivers gave Gronowski a lot of help last week. I didn't pore over the game film frame by frame, but there were times they got open, but as a rule over 60 minutes, I'm not so sure that they showed me anything.
Yeah, I wasn't overly impressed with some of the receivers. I thought Sam Phillips's best performance in that entire game was that 46-yard punt return in the fourth quarter. I mean, I thought that was the best he looked all game. And I think that's a concern as well, but I also go back to, I mean, I was called tight end university for a reason. And their tight ends looked pretty good. But so did Iowa State's tight ends. I was thoroughly impressed with their tight ends to start the season, particularly against South Dakota last week, Rob. I mean, obviously, they're a little bit more veteran guys, but they still looked pretty confident. They looked pretty in control throughout those first two games.
Yeah, and I think it's become kind of a hallmark of – I guess I'd say Coach Campbell likened it, the depth in that room, to what they had when they have Charlie Kohler, who's with the Baltimore Ravens, in a very deep room there. Chase Allen, son of course, former UNI coach Terry Allen, who certainly spent a couple seasons on practice squads at a little UFL, really good college tight end. And Dylan Sainer, who I think would have stuck in the league longer except for injuries that eventually forced him to just take a settlement and stop after being with the Saints for a couple of years. So I think they feel like they've got that type of talent with Ben Bramer, freshman All-American 2 years ago, banged up most of last season, who had the two touchdowns against South Dakota, and Gabe Burkle, the former Cedar Rapids Prairie star. He's really started to come on late last season, and he's looked great. He's averaging, I think, 16.6 yards a catch, had a touchdown as well. And you got Tyler Moore, a guy that's been hurt more than anyone, I think, ever associated with Iowa State. But he was a highly touted guy coming out of, I believe it was Johnston. And he's a senior now, and he's made some nice catches. And, oh, by the way, you've got Cooper Alexander, who they loved, but he got banged up last year out of Oklahoma and had a drop early this year. But Trip Walsh, Keaton Roskup, a former Linmar prep, they're really deep in that room. And the stat that blew my mind while I was watching that game is Rocco Beck set a record by completing 19 of 20 passes. And the one misfire, by the way, was toward Roskup. And Taylor Mauser blamed himself. He said it wasn't a good route. So it was, he said Rocco should have gone 20 of 20. But 13 of those catches by tight ends and all three touchdowns, obviously. I think this could be the most productive tight end room they have. And I think that's the X factor in this game for Iowa State. Iowa State is probably going to struggle to run the ball with Iowa State having experience on the D line, obviously new linebackers, but some returning talent, obviously, in that secondary with Wampa and Hall and others. So they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to ride Bracco's arm and sometimes his legs. And I think those tight ends are the key to unlocking that potential because they can line up in a heavy formation and send all those guys out on routes, you know. And so you're thinking, oh, okay, it's a run play. It's third and four. No, they're sending those guys out sidelines over the middle. And that's tough to defend. And I think that's going to be the X factor for Iowa State's offense, at least on Saturday.
I wonder what Iowa's coaches think now when they see Burkle play. I mean, how many tight ends that grew up less than a half hour from Kinnick Stadium get away from them? Or players that get switched to tight end, which is usually the case. Yeah. He has been wonderful the last 2 years. And the catch he made against Kansas State on fourth down, that was the play of the game. That wasn't a great throw by Becht. It was a great call. But yeah. If Burkle doesn't make that over-the-shoulder catch, they might lose that game. And we're talking about a whole different thing here. But he made an enormous play. And he made a lot of nice plays last year. And Bramer, I mean, it's when you go 11-3, it's hard to say. I wonder what they would have been with Bramer.
Yeah.
But you thought it all last season. Boy, if they had Bramer in the lineup, you know, there would have been at least more potency in the offense. He's really good. Yeah. So it's got to be kind of weird for Iowa to see a rival group of tight ends at Iowa State who stack up to anything they've got.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, him growing up only 30 minutes away from Kinnick. I don't remember who said it. I know Ferentz mentioned it. I think it was Seth Wallace, the assistant DC for Iowa. Almost 100 players from both teams have lived in the state of Iowa their entire lives and are participating in some capacity in this rivalry. I would have to double check some math here, but I don't think there's a rivalry that has that many hometown, born and raised in this state, participating in this kind of a game. I mean, Mike, you probably would be the first person I would ask in that question.
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm guessing Florida State, UCLA, and USC do.
Florida State, based on pure population, I'm sure there's a couple others that definitely come up there.
That's it. It's significant for sure.
Yeah, SMU, TCU.
I'm like, I'm sure there's other states that just by sheer population have more numbers.
But I get what Wallace was trying to say, but I mean, you've got 100 plus players on both teams. You're going to have 40 or 50 Iowans. That's nothing new.
Yeah.
But the thing is how important are these players? I think, I don't know if he said it, but every starting linebacker in this game is from Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay. But not every starting quarterback, not every starting running back, not every starting wide receiver,
right.
You know, and I'm sure not every starting defensive back either.
Yeah.
So you take it all with a grain of salt. Iowa's given the state's given the two schools a lot of great offensive linemen and defensive linemen and linebackers, more than you would expect. And a part of the reason I think is because there are two really sound major university programs that have made football palatable to kids still in an era in which participation is declining.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point as well, especially with just how strong both of these programs have been, particularly in the last decade. I mean, you guys mentioned it earlier. Iowa historically has been a very consistent program. But to see Iowa State's rise in this rivalry, too, has certainly helped as well. So I'm really intrigued. I think for me, it's in my experience, it's relatively abnormal for a coach to point out, like, hey, there's like this many kids from this state that are participating in this rivalry, which is why I bring it up to the two that have, you know, lived in this state a lot longer than, you know, 3 weeks like myself. But, you know, just to kind of wrap it up, I'm curious, you know, what – Rob, you mentioned it a little bit, but Mike, what do you think is going to be the X factor of this matchup, whether it be for Iowa State, for Iowa? And I mean, do you think this is going to be another field goal kick to win it? Or do you think that we might see a little bit more offense? What are your final thoughts heading into Saturday morning?
Well, the trite thing is to talk about turnovers. As I understand it, no team has won in the last 11 years and had more turnovers than the opponent, but I think that's just common in football, period. Sure, both teams have field goal kickers who've been assassins so far this season, but, you know, will they be put in a spot to win the game? I don't know. Maybe one of the two punters will average 55 yards. Okay, maybe somebody will bust a return 75 yards. I don't know. I think that I have no idea who's going to win the game. I love the way Rocco Becht plays. If Gronowski just hangs with Becht, I think Iowa finds a way to win it. There's no home field advantage in this rivalry. And the underdogs have won three of the last four times. So although I think if I had a ball-peen hammer hanging over my head, and was forced to make a pick, I'd take Iowa State, but I'm going to say Iowa just to be what I think is a little bit against the flow.
Yeah. I mean, I've been, you always think it's going to be a field goal kick, and I certainly envision it as a one score game. I think the other X factor in this is Taylor Mauser in his second year as offensive coordinator. And he has been allowed to take shots, roll. I mean, when he described Rocco Becht as a psychopath, one of the things he said is those shots that they took, because they started last season with a shot against North Dakota, Jalen Nolan, double coverage, one of those Houston Texans, caught the ball, 50-some yard pass, started South Dakota home opener, 66-yard pass to Brett Eskelson, wide receiver. And he said they don't do those things just willy-nilly. It's because Rocco Becht does well when he's got to deal with something. He says when they try to make it easy for him, he struggles. But when it's hard, he thrives. And I think, again, that's the mark of a winner. Now, I think Iowa State has been sucked into the trap of trying to run their offense between the tackle boxes against Iowa, which just never works. Iowa's kryptonite is if you've spread the field and force them to cover every inch of it. And I think guys like Xavier Townsend, the transfer receiver from UCF, that Taraco has a bond going back to childhood with, he's been banged up, but we saw him have an 11-yard touchdown run last week. He might flash. We saw Dominic Overby and Eskelson flash against Kansas State, the tight ends. I think Iowa State is going to be aggressive offensively. Yes, they're going to run the ball because they always do, to whatever success they or lack of it they'll have. But I think that creativity is what puts them over the top and the amount of playmakers they have at tight end. And again, a defense that I think is still finding itself, but I think as long as the back end holds up, is not going to give up a lot of big plays. Again, the turnovers do tell the tale, and I still can't get over how Iowa, I think five straight seasons, did not turn over once in this rivalry game. I mean, that is insane to me. Obviously, the last three, they turned it over an average of two times. One of the reasons Iowa State's won two of three. I think the creativity on offense allows Iowa State to win a little bit more comfortably than usual, maybe by a touchdown. But again, this is always a coin flip game, and I truly believe it'll be the case again. And something unexpected always happens, whether it be Kyle Conrady's breakthrough moment, 54-yard game winner last season, whether it be Detrone Young while blocking in punt in Iowa State down one, takes out the punt return of Deshante Jones when Brock Purdy quarterbacks. Iowa State loses that game and they very well might have won it. Something weird happens. And take any prediction with a big hunk of sea salt for sure.
I was going to say, not just a grain, just like a whole big chunk.
Block,
of it.
You got to
just open the whole bottle. There you go. No, I think the expect the unexpected has been the biggest thing that I've been told when I've asked about this rivalry and I've done research is that it doesn't matter what year it is. It doesn't matter who's the quarterback, who's in whatever position. There's something weird that's going to happen. And I think that's where, to me, that's what makes it fun, because I like seeing the unexpected take place, whether it's for the team I'm covering or against the team I'm covering. The unexpected is what makes sports enjoyable for everybody, myself included. I think that I agree with both of you in the sense of the offense is going to dictate this game for both teams. The creativity that Iowa State has and the flexibility that they can have with Rocco as their quarterback is super helpful. The ability to spread out the field, spread out Iowa's defense is going to be big. But at the same time, I'm with you, Mike. If Gronowski can go toe-to-toe and match a little bit of what Rocco can do, I don't want to say it's going to be a shootout, because the history just says that just doesn't happen in this game. But in the grand scheme of this rivalry, it could be a little bit more of an offensive battle than we're expecting. I think, though, that it is going to be special teams that decides this. I don't think it's going to be a field goal. I think it's going to be a really good punt return. I don't know what it is, but there's just something about it that just kind of screams somebody's going to have a really good punt return, and that's going to be how this game is decided. I think I picked 17-3 Iowa just for the sake of I think it's going to be – I know. I was bold with that prediction, and I'll admit that. But I think that – what makes it interesting for me is I think if there's somebody that gets a really good punt return, puts that team in a good field position in the fourth quarter, I think that's going to be what ends up being the deciding factor of this game. I just can't see it being something where it's like, oh, it's going to be a runaway, or there's going to be, you know, a 54-yard passing touchdown or a rushing touchdown in the fourth quarter. I think it's going to be really good field position with 45 seconds to go on the clock in the fourth quarter, and that's how this game is going to end. But again, we could all be totally wrong. That's just the nature of this rivalry. And I think that's what makes this fun. So, all right. my two awesome guests, do you have any final thoughts before we get to see what this rivalry will bring this year?
I'm just thrilled to know that I can be called a psychopath and it's not completely a bad thing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, check out the book, 2022. I unfortunately don't remember his name, but I'm sure you could find it. 2022 book, Psychopath.
I was really happy you brought up that quote. I won't lie, because I remember listening to that press conference, and if you weren't going to say it, I was going to bring it up. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
And now, what about sociopaths? Are they okay too?
They're much more problematic. I think more serial killers are sociopaths than psychopaths. But that's
problematic.
Problematic is a good word. Well, perhaps a little bit of a euphemism. But I will say that the Iowa State's fan base will melt down if they don't score a touchdown in this game. I think they really feel like they've got an offense that can really attack anyone. But we'll see. They struggled somewhat against Kansas State before really hitting their stride. So, and we saw what Kansas State had to do last week, win a shootout against a not too highly regarded North Dakota team at home. The post-Dublin hangover that the losing team has continued. So, it'll be fun. Just enjoy it, Madison. Look at some of the weirdness and just kind of go, okay, that's new. And welcome to the Cy-Hawk rivalry that's in the best shape it's ever been. So it could have been like what Mike said back in the day when both teams were bad and you didn't know who would win then, but it didn't really matter either. So
yeah, that's a very fair point. Well, I appreciate both of you coming and chatting some football with us. Mike, thank you for doing it for 2 weeks in a row now. Both of your insights were super helpful. If you like more of this content, you guys can subscribe to the Gazette for a weekly newsletter that includes the podcast, also called Hawk Off the Press, and you can like and subscribe to watch more content. But until then, thanks for watching.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed, be empowered. Subscribe to the Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.